Dark Reef Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. Autumn Semester 2009. This is Business Finance FIL 240, Section 6. Lecture 16, delivered on October 13, 2009. The title of this lecture is Using Time Value of Money in Cash Flow Analysis.
Today, Using Time Value of Money in Cash Flow Analysis. I will take the homework problems that I gave you as the platform for discussing using the formulas themselves and also for extensions of the formulas and discuss other uses along the way of these present value and future value of annuity ideas. Now, first of all, for the first problem, which was for a future value of an annuity, it was at 6.25%, so we just crank out, it was for an FV, and that will be the level cash flow times 1 plus the periodic interest rate to the number of periods minus 1 divided by the periodic interest rate. It's really just plug and chug is all these problems are. That's all they ever come out to be. So in this case, we got the future value, and it is a regular annuity because the first payment in this future value occurs right now. Okay, so that's a regular future value annuity. Would be the level cash flow. What is he putting in the bank every month? $1,000 every year? Yeah, that's not bad. $1,000 times 1 plus 0.068, and this is to the 20th power minus 1, all divided by 0.068. It was 6.8%, wasn't it? No, I'm sorry, 6.25. I'm sorry. That's 6.25%. It was 6.25%. 6.25%. 0.0625. Now, just make sure you can do these in on your calculator and get the answers that the right answers. And it's a matter of if you want to break it down. Be careful about rounding things. It's better if you can just hammer the whole thing in one chew. 0.0625 plus 1. And then you raise that to the 20th power. And then you subtract 1. That was different. Okay. 1.0625. You raise that to the 20th power. And then you subtract 1. And then you divide the result by 0.0625. And you get a future value annuity factor of about 38.0944. We call those the factor, and I'll explain about that in just a little bit here. But for now, just know that this interim number, 1 plus 0.0625, to the 20th power minus 1 divided by 0.0625 times 1, that in itself is called the future value annuity factor. Did you get that number, by the way? Is that the number? Let me try that again just to make sure. I had it written there wrong on the board. 20th power minus 1 divided by 0.0625. Oh, it is. I did write it a little wrong there. It is. That factor is 37.7897. Be careful about rounding it, though. So the future value is 1,000 times 37.7897. And then you should get a future value of this annuity of $37,789.65. Now, here's what I want to get to. This is a regular annuity in a future value sense. And that means that in this annuity, at period zero, right now, you push in your first $1,000. And then each year after that, you're going to push in $1,000. Here's one, two. On through until you get ninth year 19, $1,000. And then year 20, you collect it right here at the end of that period of 20. I'm sorry, 20. And then you collect it here at the end. So that last 20th year one, you let it grow through the year. Now, if this were an annuity due, a future value annuity due, your first kick into this would not occur at the beginning of the period. It would occur at the end of the period. So you would have one last, you would not have a $1,000 right there at the beginning, but you'd have $1,000 you'd put in, and then you'd take the whole wad out. Now, is that future value going to be higher or lower than the 37,789.65? Would the annuity due, the future value annuity due, be of greater value or lesser value? It would work it. Okay. See that $1,000 right there? It won't earn the money through the 20 years. It happens right. Oh, God! It happens right there. So you're not. So we might expect it to be a little less. But here's the thing: we can do a formula. There is a formula for annuities due. Annuity due formulas. There are, but. What we really could do here is just simply take a 19-year annuity out there and then add $1,000 to it at the end. That would save you having to memorize another formula. So if I did this as an annuity due, I would do it as a 19-year annuity the same way, 1,000 times 1 plus 0.0625 to the 19th power minus 1 divided by 0.0625. And then I just add $1,000 to it that I'm going to put in right before I take all of it out. And if I were to do that, I would go 1.0625 to the, whoops, to the 20th power, to the 19th power, minus 1. And then divide that by 0.0625. And I'd get a value factor of 34.6256. And for God's sake, someone check my work here. I do so suck at arithmetic. So it'd be 1,000 times 34.6256 plus $1,000 extra. And so I should get $34,625.56 plus $1,000, and I'll get $35,625.56. Sure enough, a little less. Now, it should not be dramatically different. A little bit. So now, that's a future value for your consideration. Now, a present value, and in the problem that I gave you, on January 1, 2010, you win a lottery with a payoff of $2,500 at the end of every year for the next 10 years. If you discount the cash flow at 7.8%, what is the least amount you would accept as a single payment right now instead? So we're going to get, so we have a timeline, and sometimes it's nice to just write these, draw these timelines out here. So, at the end of every year, you're going to get $2,500. $2,500 for, what is it, 0, 1, 2, on out to 7, 8, 9, 10. And then you're going to get a lot, $2,500 through these 10 years. It's classic annuity present value. You just crank it through. Now, the present value formula is the cash level cash flow times 1 minus 1 plus the periodic interest rate to the negative nth power, all divided by R. Just pound it out. You're going to have $2,500. The present value is going to be $2,500 times 1 minus 1 plus 0.078, in this case, to the negative 10th power, all divided by 0.078. And if we beat that one into the calculator's brain, we should come up with 0.078 to the 10th power minus the annuity present value of regular annuity factor here will come out to be 6.7710, and you've got $2,500 times that, and you get a present value of the annuity of $16,927.59. I think that's right, yeah. And again, just make sure you can do them. Now, what if, on the other hand, your first payment came right away? That would be nice. In this case, if I had a present value of an annuity due, would it be worth more or less than this regular annuity that I just did here? Do we have a consensus of the herd here? I don't think we're ready to be an investment club yet. Too much fighting. It would be more, and it's just because instead of waiting to your 10 to get that $2,500 there, you get it now. Now is better than later. So in this case, we should, when we calculate the annuity due, whether we do it by a formula or just modify the existing formula, we should get a number that's somewhat larger than this one. Now, again, there's a formula for annuity due, but you could also just kind of wing it. Take that $2,500 off the 10 and put it here at the beginning. So that $2,500 is going to come to you right now. So the present value of the annuity due is going to be the $2,500 you get now. There's no discount on it because it's happening right now, plus a 9-year annuity of $2,500 discounted at 7.8%. So it would be, that second part would be 2,500 times 1 minus 1 plus 0.078 to the negative 9th over 0.078. So you would get, in this case, for the annuity due, $2,500 plus $2,500 times, and I am going to try to beat this one through the calculator here real quick, 1 minus 1.078 to the negative 9th power minus 0.078. And I get a factor there of 6.2992. So if I take that times 2,500, I'll get $15,000, so my present value will be the $2,500 kicker right on the front end, plus $15,747.94. Add that those two together. Survey says you get $18,247.94. Well, there you go. The annuity due, when it's a present value, the annuity due is worth more than the regular annuity, simply because your cash flow is shifted in time forward somewhat. If for those of you who remember your dark days of accounting. Do you remember the different accounting, the depreciation methods that you were introduced to? There was straight line, and then there was the declining balance. Do they even teach some of yours digits anymore? Vaguely, yes. And, yeah. If you hum a few bars, I'll pick up on the chorus. And the MACRS and all that. Well, the whole point of those was to load the depreciation expense, which is an expense against your net, a taxable income, forward in time. That's the whole idea. Essentially, we're talking annuities here. We're just trying to find ways to bring value forward in time. In this case, in the case of the depreciation, by finding an accelerated method that puts most of the expense in the early years, all you're doing is increasing the value of the tax shield arising from the depreciation by shifting the shield forward in time. That's what you're seeing here. Now, the bottom line of all of this, if it's present value, annuity, a regular annuity versus an annuity due. Imagine what I used to look like. I wear black and I used to write on chalkboards back in the early days. I mean, come out looking white every... The regular annuity will be less than the annuity due, all other parameters being equal. If it's a future value, the annuity that is regular compared to the annuity that is due, the regular annuity will be worth more than the annuity due. Those are things to keep in mind. They are just delicious multiple choice questions. Hint, hint. Okay? Which of the following is correct? The present value of a regular annuity is greater than the present value of a regular annuity due, but the future value of an annuity that is regular is greater than the... See, I could just go through four or five different possible ways just to confuse the hell out of you. Okay, enough of that one. Enough. And though there's some dues versus regulars. Okay, now. Non-level annuity. In problem five, you have a project that's $3,000 right away. It pays off $5,000 at the end of the first 3 years, each of the first 3 years. Then $6,000 in year four, $8,000 in year five, and then it goes back to $500,000 in years six, seven, and eight. You have no salvage value, which is something that's kind of cool to calculate. You can actually do real project analysis, and at the end of a project's life, you can say, is there a salvage value? If there is, we'll take that into consideration as part of the value of the project. Now, I have a feeling most of you probably figured this out already, but let me write it out here, the timeline of this, so that we can treat it like a plain old annuity problem. We have year zero, year one, year two, year three, four, five, six, seven, and eight. And then we just crank through it. We're going to pay out -$3 million right now. This is, by the way, classic net present value analysis. This is what net present value analysis does. And then we're going to have $500,000 at the end of each of the first 3 years. And then it flips up and we get a spike of $600,000 year four and $800,000 in year five. And then it levels back down to the $500,000 for the last 3 years of the project's life with no salvage value at the end. Now, if you're really butch, you can just do a present value of a lump sum of each of these and add them up. You'll get the answer. but there is a slightly sneakier way to do it. I could say that this $600,000 that occurred in year four was really $500,000 plus $100,000. And this $800,000 in year five was $300,000 plus $500,000. So what you actually had was a flat annuity with a couple of lump sums thrown in just for the sake of fun in that. So really, this is just an 8-year $500,000 annuity. What was my discount rate on that? Did I give 8.8%? So really, the present value, I'm going to do a $500,000 annuity, 1 minus 1 plus 0.088 to the negative 8th power over 0.088. And then I'm just going to tack on a couple of pieces. I've got $100,000 that I'm going to discount 4 years back. And that's just 1 plus 0.088 to the negative 4th power. And then I've got another little piece here of $300,000. Is it 300? Yeah, 300,000. 1 plus 0.088 to the negative 5th power. In other words, just adding on those two residues right there. This is an old trick, by the way, and it's actually, it'll make a problem go a lot faster if you can peel out an actual level annuity and then just bring up a couple of pieces that you have to calculate as residuals. Don't forget to calculate those full residuals. So if I work this through, and I'll do the pieces here. Eight, change sign, y to the x. I'm going to put on my glasses before I get myself in trouble. Minus 0.088 divide 500,000 times, and I'll get for that part of it 2.7 million, $2,788,100.43. And then I'm going to also do 100,000 times 1.088 to the negative 4th power that will be $71,364.86. And then one more piece here, 300,000 times 1.088 to the negative 5th power. Which would be 196, is that right? $196,788.11. And I get the present value of these cash, positive cash flows is $3,056,243.39. So the net present value of the project would be negative $3 million out the door plus $3,056,243.39 in the door. And so the net present value of the project is a positive $56,243.39. It's a positive number. It doesn't matter how positive. It's positive. At the discount rate we used, that means the project is a go. That's all there is to it. Now comes the subtler piece. What would happen to the go, no-go of the project as the discount rate you used went up? Talk to me. What would happen to the favorability, shall we say, of this project as the discount rate I used increased? Yes. Because if I use something like 0.095, 0.12, the present value of those future expected cash flows would be declining against a fixed outlay at the beginning. Therefore, as the prevailing interest rate environment rate goes up, rises, the viability of projects becomes more in jeopardy. That's why, remember early in the course I was talking about, I showed you how you will start kicking out more projects as your interest rate goes up. This is why. This is the why of that. Your projects become less and less, and so therefore, more and more, you are going to have to just take on projects that have higher risk to them. You're going to have to take on projects where your expected future cash flows are higher to compensate for the possibility for the interest rate driving the present values down. So you're going to find that as you look at these projects in terms of NPV, net present value, as the interest rate increases, the net present value is going to fall like that, a straight line. And there will be a threshold, a break point, at which you will find that the project's just a given project just isn't viable. Now here's the deal. You see that point where it breaks, it crosses the R-axis, the discount rate axis? That is, it has different names for it. The name that we usually use is the internal rate of return of the project. That is the interest rate prevailing, the discount rate, that is the boundary between go and no-go on the project. That is, in other words, what I would love to find out is, well, you know, I can pull an interest rate, a discount rate. I could use CAPM to do that. On the other hand, it would be nice if we could say, well, what interest rate would make this a negative net present value project? Would it be 9%? Probably not. 9.5%? Oh, you're getting there. Maybe 10%. Somewhere, it's actually not too far away from 0.088%, because we're not too far off right here. See this 56? That is a very close. That's a small number compared to the cash flow sizes that were involved here. So we're close to the close to it right here. We're close right there. Now that's what I call, again, that's called internal rate of return. The internal rate of return on the project is the discount rate for cash flows that makes NPV equal to zero. It's the break-even point. So if I found out, for example, that this was the net present value of the internal rate of return was 9.6%. Then someone could come to me and say, well, I've got this project. Okay, what's the discount rate that would be used for this project? Well, we're going to use 8.8%. Okay, it's a go. But if I said, well, okay, what discount rate are you going to use? Well, we were thinking of using 11.2%. It's a no-go. I already know that because the internal rate of return has told me the breaking point. There is one limit on internal rate of return. It's a powerful tool. It's one of our most powerful tools. There is one limit on it. The cash flow has to switch sign only once, or internal rate of return has actually no mathematical meaning. It's a mathematical thing. But see here how the cash flow switched from negative to positive and it stayed positive. You have to have that for an internal rate of return to actually have any meaning at all. Otherwise, you get into this thing where the where the NPV function actually goes up and down, porpoises back and forth. It's, like I said, it's a thing with, it's a mathematical thing. So you would, this all works only if you have one switch in the sign of the cash flow. Now, some projects will require several years of negative outlays before you start to see positive. That's fine. That's fine. You just discount the negatives all back to the beginning, get their present value, and then discount all the positives back and get their present value. You can do that. There's nothing hard about that. But as long as it just switches sign once. I needed to make that qualifier just to make sure that you don't ever use an NPV where you can't use one. Okay, enough of that. Enough of that. Let me do something here. Don't want to spend too much more time, but I did want to do the mortgage payment one. Mortgage payments, classic problem. It's done literally thousands of times every day all across the country. You can do your own calculation of your mortgage payments. What would be the monthly payments on a 30-year, 5.89% fixed mortgage for $200,000? In a case like this, we know the present value. You're going to get a $200,000 loan. It's coming now. That's the money you're getting. Let me write the present value for it. PV equals the level cash flow times 1 minus 1 plus the periodic interest rate to the negative number of periods, all divided by the periodic interest rate. Well, here, we don't know the cash flow, level cash flow. That's the payment. But we do know that the discounted value of that level annuity of payments has to be what they are lending you at the bank. In this case, the periodic interest rate, what did I say, the annual, the APR was 5.89%. 0.0589, but you're making monthly payments, so that would be divided by 12. And your number of periods would be 30 years times 12, which would be 360. And like I said, this is a classic calculation. And you can get into amortization tables and all that kind of fun stuff with it. But anyway, the present value is $200,000. And that has to equal this mortgage payment, level mortgage payment, times 1 minus 1 plus 0.0589 over 12 to the negative 360th power divided by 0.0589 over 12. The only thing you have to watch out for is parentheses in doing this. Be careful about rounding, doing the calculation 0.0589 divided by 12, and then using your estimate of it in the calculator. It's better if you can just key it in straight as 0.0589 divided by 12. But again, watch out, you're going to have to use parentheses. And in this case, what will happen here is you'll have $200,000 equals the cash flow times, and I'm going to write this number out here, 0.0589 enter 12 divide plus raise that try to do this in my on the fly like this. 12 divide plus 360, change the sign, y to the x, minus 0.0589, enter 12, divide. So the number that'll come out here, 1 minus the quantity, 1 plus 0.0589 divided by 12 to the negative 360 over the quantity 0.0589 divided by 12, will come out to be 168.7773. And so I'll divide both sides by that. take the reciprocal, and I get a payment of $1,184.99. Now, I'm almost sure, well, you probably wouldn't have even seen this if you were old enough. See, in the old days, we didn't have the calculators to do these. In the backs of finance books and in every bank and savings and loan, there was this giant set of tables. Along a column, I think it was along a column, would be the number of years, and across the top would be interest rates in like increments of 0.05s, like 6.5, 7, 7.5, 8, 8.5. And what they would do is they'd say these are for 12-month loans, 12 payments a year loans. They would give you this bank of numbers that would look like this one. And what you would do is you would go down, okay, 30 years, and then you would go across 5.8%, 5.89% in this case, and you would locate a number, and that's the number you would find there. It's actually, the tables were enormous, especially in banks where they had fractional interest rates because they'd have to do them in hundredth increments sometimes and all of that. So they would actually have these numbers calculated for them, and then these books were very popular, and finance books had them too. Because back in the old days when I taught this, we didn't have the calculators, so we would always go to those tables in the backs of books and look up and then say, okay, we found 168.773, so that's what we'll divide the loan amount by or into so that we can get the mortgage payment here. Now we do it with these calculators and just hammer out the results like this these days. But anyway, if you ever run into, in fact, does the back of this, the book we're using here, does it have those tables in it? It might actually have the tables in it. I don't know whether it does or not. But if you ever got desperate and your calculator died on you, these tables are still out there. And as a matter of fact, I found a whole pile of them on the internet someplace. And as a matter of fact, you know, on the internet, you can actually find mortgage loan calculators to find the actual value of the mortgage payment. But anyway, this allows you, by the way, to go ahead and find out how much you are going to borrow, based on how much you're going to borrow, what your payments will be. So when you're thinking about that fabulous home that you're going to buy for $500,000 at an interest rate of 8.6%, something like that, you can calculate the payments yourself right up front. And you can find that, and in fact, in real estate finance, if you take a real estate finance course from me, a whole lot of it's about doing all the tricks with the points and the discounts and the fees up front to calculate your payments and to calculate the actual rate of the mortgage as opposed to the stated rate. That's what that's all about. Now, I'm going to take you on one more journey here. Back in the world of investment. The hell was that? God. Okay, look. I'm going to take all this off the board here for a little while and take you back to the dark early days of this course. But, well, actually, there's one other thing I have to do before I do that. There's something that I had left off and I got to bring it up before I forget it again. A perpetuity. It sounds like it couldn't exist in the real world. But in fact, in a sense, it does. In a very material sense, it does. Years ago, before you knew about it, you actually were sired by a lady from Decatur and Bill Gates. He was in town. He was lonely. He was blottoed. And you were the product of that. You are a love child of Bill Gates. And he finally feels so bad after all these years that in his will, He decides that he is going to make you a beneficiary. For the rest of your life, you are going to get $100 a year. For the rest of your life. Is he great or what? Now, you find this out on January the 1st of 2011. He died on December the 31st. And so, on the last day of that year, and every year after that, you are going to receive $50. Or $100. I'm trying to cheat you. What would be the present value of that? Now, obviously, you might... not obviously. We have actually asked this of regular people. What would they think? They say, well, that's got an infinite amount of value. No, it doesn't. Because even though there's going to be $100 forever and ever and ever, those $100 that are out there 30, 50, 100 years, whatever, they have almost no value to them. So there is a present value to it. This thing is called a perpetuity. It goes on forever and ever. And the perpetuity, the present value of a perpetuity, is the amount of the cash flow that you're going to get divided by the discount rate that you use. So let's say, in this case, that you are going to discount this cash flow at 5%. It's relatively safe money. So in this case, the present value of what you're going to get forever and ever is going to be $100 divided by 5%, which is $2,000. Not all that much. Now, would this thing, is that real? Is it really anything like that? Oh, yeah, sure. As a matter of fact, a preferred stock, a share of preferred stock, is a fixed dividend set forever. If the company lives forever, which we assume corporations do, you're going to get the same amount of money every year, forever and ever and ever. That's a perpetuity. So I can value preferred stock with this animal. In fact, I could value a lot of things. Even if it were common stock, and there were a dividend out there. Common stock. A company will pay a dividend of 50 cents a share every year forever. Every year. But I don't put on the forever because we would assume that if the company is a going concern, companies don't die. I should be able, and let's take the discount rate on this, or let's take our discount rate for this one, saying that it's as riskier than it would be for preferred stock or from an annuity from Bill Gates Trust. This one, let's put it at a discount rate of, let's say, 10%. Well, the present value of it would be 50 cents. Survey says that stock is worth $5. That stock is worth $5. Because that's what the present value of what you're going to get out of it is. You say, well, what if I sold it later? Wouldn't I have to take in consideration the capital gain? Well, the capital gain, well, the value of it, the price you sell it at, say 5 years from now, should be the value of that perpetuity 5 years from now. So the value at price of the stock at any given time at which you could sell it would already be impounding the value of the perpetuity from there on out. So that should be approximately the value of the stock if it has a flat dividend and there are no special dividends. Now, there's one little twist on this. Dividend with constant growth. In this case, the present value would be the dividend at period one divided by R minus the growth rate. Watch it here. Watch it. You have to talk about the dividend at period one. Here I don't have to do that because the dividend at period one and period zero and period 50 are all the same. Okay. You own a stock that is now paying a dividend of 40 cents per share, common. That dividend is expected to grow at 5% forever. If you discount cash flows from this company at 12%, what is the value of the stock now? Qualifier, warning. The growth rate will have to be below the discount rate or the formula falls apart. There's a way we can deal with this if the growth rate for a while is really large. But look at this. It's actually really easy. Look, first of all, our discount rate is 12%. Well, let me write that as a decimal, 0.12. The growth rate is 0.05. Now, the dividend right here, which I designate as D0, is 40 cents, 0.40. We don't want the dividend now. We want the dividend at D1. But that's easy enough. Look, D1 would be, if it's growing at, what the hell, 5% a year, the dividend at year one would be 40 cents times 1 plus 0.05, just grow it 1 year. I'm not even going to try to do that one in my head. 1.05 times 40 cents is 42 cents. Be sure you do that. Be sure. Don't forget, if I give you the dividend now and there's growth, just bring it up one period. Grow it one period, okay? So now we can do PV equals D1, which is 42 cents over 0.12 minus 0.05, which would be 42 cents, 0.42 over 0.07. I always watch my math. What is it? $6. Notice that the value of this perpetuity with constant growth will go up as the growth rate goes up. See that? Because as the growth rate goes up, the R minus G will get smaller in the denominator, which will boost the size of the whole fraction. That's just, and that's obvious, if a higher growth rate. But the problem would be, what would happen in a period of real serious growth in the dividend? And you had a discount rate that was below the growth rate for a while. Your dividend now is 50 cents, and it will grow by 15% for 2 years, then it will grow at 8% after that forever. Discount rate is 10%. Do you see, you can't use the formula straight up. First of all, the dividend isn't growing at a constant rate. Second of all, that early growth rate is above the discount rate, which screws up the perpetuity calculation. No problem, though. Draw one of those stupid timelines just to get yourself 1, 2, 3, 4. And I don't have to actually take it that far. Look, my dividend is 50 cents right now. I'm growing at 15% a year on the dividend. So in what year one, my dividend will be, grr, 50 cents times 1.15 will be 57.5 cents, 0.575. In year two, I'll take that amount times 1.15 again, and I'll get 66.13 for my dividend. And now I'm going to grow it one more year at 8%. You'll see why in a second. In year three, my dividend will be 0.7142. Now I can stop. Watch what I'm going to do. This is the kind of problem I was warning you about, where it gets kind of weird. First of all, we're going to break this into a couple of present values. First of all, we've got the present value of the year zero amount. It's 50 cents. The present value of the year one amount would be 57.575 times 1 plus 0.10 to the negative first. The present value of the year two would be 0.6613 times 1 plus 0.10 to the negative second. Okay, what I've done here is I've telescoped all of these unusual cash flows back. I brought them back, and I'm going to put those together here. I'm just going to put those together real quick here and hope that I get it right. Okay, 0.5 plus, and did you do this? I got $1.57 for it. Is that it? Yeah, about $1.57. What was it as a round? I just cleared it. 157 point?
It was
1.569. Can you give me one more decimal? Two. Okay. There is the present value of that mess right there. Now, here's the cool part. I can now do a perpetuity. If I do 7142 over 0.10 minus 0.08, I will get the present value at the beginning of year two of the constant growth perpetuity. Make sure you see that. This is what I was talking about again before, where you can get these weird-ass problems where you get this mixed cash flow. You see, whatever this dividend was, remember the perpetuity formula for a constant growth perpetuity says that its value at zero, which in this case is here at year two, would be its value at year one divided by R minus G. Well, I can do that. Now I've got a constant growth. So this thing right here now has 0.7142, and I am doing some rounding here, divided by 0.02. It has a $35.71. This constant growth, a new perpetuity, has a value at the beginning of year two, at zero for this part of it, of $35.71. Okay, do you see at least in principle what I'm doing here? Can you do this yet? I'm not expecting you to right now, but you will get there. Okay. Now, I don't want that value at year two. I need it back here with this other stuff that I did. So I've got to now telescope this 3571 back there. Discounted 2 years back. So I have to do that part as 3571 times 1 plus 0.10 to the negative second. And it has a value there, if I put that with the other, of $29.5124. I probably got some rounding error in here. I do appreciate that. So the total value, the actual final value of that stock right now is about, and I, like I said, there's going to be some rounding error because I was cutting off dead digits there, $31.08. The key, the real key, was to work out individually the part of the cash flow that was turbulent. Just deal with that. And that's generally what you'll do in any kind of a problem. If there's a messy piece of cash flow, just take those as lump sums. Bring them back. Here, when year two began, I saw the stability. I had a constant growth perpetuity coming at me. I know that a constant growth perpetuity, its present value right here is going to be D1 over R minus G. Well, that would mean that right here, this is D1. I've got my R, I've got my G, so I can get its present value. But that's at year two's beginning. I have to draw that back now. I have to bring it clear back here with the rest of this mess that I put together. And like I said, these are not obvious right away. These are the ones that you throw at people just to drop the scores on exams, which means I'll put five or six of them on. No. Look, it's really a matter of just getting used to playing with cash flows and really also seeing where these timelines begin for certain present values. That one was a mess. It's not too bad, but it's kind of a mess. And I don't know, I'm almost tempted to put up a couple of these for you tonight, but I don't think I'm going to. I'd rather you focus for that pop quiz I'm going to give you on Thursday. Just focus on problems like the ones that I gave you in there. It'll be the same problems, just different numbers, different interest rates, and all that kind of stuff. And that'll be the quiz that I'll do on Thursday. This stuff, I'll throw a couple more, and I'll also do bond pricing on Thursday. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.